We have what? Signing of an enrolled act I need to take care of. We are that order of business of signing enrolled act, Senate enrolled act 53.
Senate enrolled act number 53, being original Senate file 72.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 53, being original Senate file 72. I have so signed. Messages from the House.
February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 432, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 48, Game and Fish Landowner Coupon Redemption Period. Ayes 58, excused 2. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, concurrence passed, message number 439. The House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 134, Natural Resource Large Project Funding. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2. Message number 440, concurrence passed. House Bill number 183, Military Tuition Assistance. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. Message number 441, concurrence passed. House Bill number 236, Special Finance Instructional Facilitator Program. Ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 442, concurrence passed. House Bill number 255, School Districts, Kindergarten Programs. Ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 443, concurrence passed. House Bill 281, Telemedicine State System. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 437, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 39, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 58, excused 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 438, concurrence failed. House Bill number 97, Weights and Measures. Ayes 0, noes 58, excused 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 444, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number one. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number one from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 39. The House conferees are Representative Cohey, Chairman, Representative Lubnow, and Peasley. Message number 445, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like committee number one from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 97. The House conferees are Representative Wallace, Chairman, Representatives Carson and Munoz. Message number 446, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 288. The House conferees are Representative Lockhart, Chairman Representative Stewart and Stubson. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Message number 430, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 26, voter registration deadline. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 431, concurrence requested. Senate File 26, licensing of entertainment activities. 28. What did I say?
26.
Senate File 28, licensing of entertainment activities. Ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 433, concurrence requested. Senate File 54, physical therapist licensure. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 434, concurrence requested. Senate File 101, Trona Utility Shot Fire Certification. Passed the House, ayes 51, noes 7, excused 2. Message number 435, concurrence requested. Senate File 47, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program Administration. Passed the House, ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2. Message number 436, concurrence requested. Senate File 56, School Finance Appropriations. Passed the House, ayes 50, noes 8, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Joint Conference Committee's appointees. For message 425, reference to House Bill 288. House Joint Conference Committee will be Bebout, Chairman, Geis, and Schiffer. Message 385, reference House Bill 39, Case, Chairman, Johnson, and Hastert. And message 438, reference to House Bill 97, Perkins, Chairman, Casey, and Geis. Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, considerations of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Burns.
Committee of the Whole, come back to order. Next bill for our consideration. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator DiCaria.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, Senator Carey. I didn't have your microphone on.
That was probably on purpose, wasn't it, Mr. Chairman?
But and they also had a conversation with some legislators at lunch, including a former, chairman of the House Education Committee, Wasserberger. And I'd like the Senate to help me welcome them to the Capitol.
Welcome to the Senate.
Good question. You can...
Okay. Next bill to come before the Committee of the Whole is House Bill 73. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill number 73, sponsored by Representative Berger, Victims of Crimes, Reporting and Notification, and Act Relating to Crime Victims. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 73, Victims of Crime Reporting and Notification. For an explanation of the bill, I yield the floor to the good senator from Uinta County.
Senator DeCaria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 73 really does a pretty straightforward thing. What it does is it puts into the application for funding in victim service providers the provision that they provide the division with an unduplicated count of who is receiving those funds. Mr. Chairman, a little bit of information to go along with that. In 2004, the legislature awarded domestic violence programs a funding stream and funded that to about $5.6 million on the biennium basis. But part of that and part of the rules from the feds asked that we have a uniform caseload reporting system. A former senator from Sweetwater County, who retired last year, also put that into the funding part of the budget, that we get an unduplicated count of how many individuals that is. Mr. Chairman, those of you that have been around in other committees realize that we've done this in lots of areas and trying to figure out where those dollars are going. Are those dollars being spent on one person? Are they spent on 10 people? You know, exactly what's going on. And, Mr. Chairman, it's not that, the dollars, we don't want to spend those dollars. It's more of the question of, are we spending them wisely, or at least can we track where those dollars are going? I mean, is one person receiving a great deal of that funding, or is it 10 people receiving that funding? The other important part of that, Mr. Chairman, is that when you look at statistics on crime statistics in some of these areas, that's also another one. Because when you look at how that goes, I mean, we don't know if a person, say, were to report some of these cases in one county and then in another county, are we assuming that there is more crime occurring than there is or not? Again, we can't make those decisions very well without this kind of information. And so, Mr. Chairman, obviously, in these that we're talking about, the violence against women or domestic violence, Mr. Chairman, we want to make sure that we protect these people. We don't want it just to be anywhere out there as far as what's going on. And so that creates somewhat of a problem in how do we collect that information but keep it, confidential so that that doesn't get out. Because obviously, in some of these cases of domestic violence, we don't want the perpetrator knowing where this person is, and we don't want that information out. So, Mr. Chairman, they've developed a system that will create a 256-bit, 15-character algorithm for each victim. And if you want more information on how that works, I think the technical senator from Johnson County would be happy to explain that to everyone because of his great knowledge of these kind of technological issues. But, Mr. Chairman, what I can assure you is that, You know, it is a pretty secure system. And really, when that happens, what it does is it will scramble the information when they put it on the initial laptop or desktop, and then it gets sent to the University of Wyoming, and then when it goes to the receiving desktop, you know, by that time, all that we're doing is having a ability to track an individual, not identify that individual by name, but so that we can have an idea of how that funding is going to take place. And really all they're looking at is they just want to look at the total data or the aggregated data in how many people are we talking about with that. And so, Mr. Chairman, really all this piece of legislation does is when they do their application, they have to provide in that application an unduplicated count of who is filing for that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to stand for questions. I would ask the body to vote favorably on House Bill 73. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
When the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 73, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
I'm going to do that again since I wasn't on the mic. I apologize. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 73, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 73 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 30. The reading clerk will read the House Bill.
130.
I'm sorry, House Bill 130.
House Bill number 130, sponsored by Representative Illoway, State Parks Matching Account, and Act Relating to State Parks and Cultural Resources. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session, Senator Burns, Chairman. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senators Myers and Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I request that when the Committee of the Whole rises, it do so in a favorable motion for House Bill 130. And to explain this bill, I yield to Senator Honeycutt.
Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, today it's not 78 pages, thank heavens. this is House Bill 130, State Parks Matching Account. I'd like to refer you to a handout from the Bass Pro Shop that was passed around. This is kind of the impetus for this bill. What this act does is relating to state parks and cultural resources, establishing the state parks and cultural resources account, establishing the state parks and cultural resources matching account. We have a very generous person here who was very fond of and did a lot of business with our late American sportsman, Kirk Gowdy. He came out here and visited the park and fell in love with the park. As you can see, he said it right on his letter and is willing to donate $900,000 over the course of the next 4 years to this park to build a visitor center. He's already donated $100,000 and he's willing to give us another $900,000, as I said, as well as some of the Kirk Gowdy family is going to give us some money as well. It's kind of unusual that somebody would give us $900,000, especially voluntarily. Within this, there is created the State Parks and Cultural Resources account. The account will consist of those funds appropriated or designated to the account by law. The department may accept small deposits in the matching account of any gift, contribution, donation, or grant for the benefit of the state parks, historical sites, or cultural resources. To the extent that funds are available in the state parks account created in this section, the state treasurer shall match any donations actually received in the parks account. A donor to the matching account may specify a particular state park, historical site, or cultural resource for the application of their donation. That was on page 2. Page 3, any matching funds received under this subsection are expended in accordance with the intent of the donor, in concert with the goals of the department relative to the then current operations plan of the department as they update them. We are asking that there is appropriated $1 million from the general fund to the state parks and cultural resources account to match this money over the next 4 years as it is donated to us. And this appropriation shall only be expended as consistent with this act. We talked with the state parks and recreation people. They were very happy to get this account. There was some discussion that you have to worry about getting this large amount of money and having the donor want something that the state parks isn't ready to build or take care of over the long term. You don't want a gift horse and you don't want a white elephant because you don't want to be feeding it for the rest of your life. The state parks guaranteed us that this fits in with their overall plan for this state park and that they actually move their headquarters of this state park into this building and then tear down their old, basically, shack that is considered their headquarters right now. They will use their enterprise fund to maintain and take care of this building in the future. That's pretty much the bill. This bill was put together to take advantage of a very generous offer and other offers that may come in the future. The arts people and parks people and historical people are very generous overall in giving money to causes like this, and that's why the account was expanded to include other parks. The $1 million is asked just to have another $100,000 available for if other people were to donate to this cause as well. With that, I will ask for your favorable consideration of this bill. Thank you. And there are some amendments.
There is a standing committee amendment. Senator Jennings.
Can we have the amendment read in, please?
House Bill 130, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on House Bill 130. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have accomplished or try to accomplish here, page 1, line 4, after appropriations, we'll strike and on line 5 for continuous appropriations. And then we'll go back over to page 3, line 11, after the word period, put a period, and strike and our continuous appropriations. Mr. Chairman, what we did here was just tell them they have to come back. It's not going to just be put in there and be continuous. And I'd ask for your favorable vote on this amendment.
Any other debate on the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 130, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're on Standing Committee Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Senator Nicholas.
House Bill 130, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 14.
Thank Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 130. Ladies and gentlemen, this simply reduces the appropriation from $900,000 to $1 million. As was discussed, there is only proposed to be a $900,000 gift, so to match that, the other $100,000 that was going to just go into the account, we're recommending against that. Urge your support of the amendment.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 130, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 has passed Committee of the Whole. There is a Committee of the Whole amendment. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole amendment, please.
House Bill number 130, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to engross copy. Delete the first Senate Standing Committee amendment.
You've heard the Committee of the Whole Amendment. What's your pleasure, Senator Massey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 13. This is just a little cleanup amendment, Mr. Chairman. It's intended to keep the $900,000 in the bill for Kurt Gowdy in the visitor center there, with a reversion date of 2013, and that matches the letter that was passed out. So it conforms with the amendment that was just passed as far as the appropriation and the intent. What it does get rid of, Mr. Chairman, is the income account or the trust fund the matching fund that had been set up through the department. After discussion with the department in the Appropriations Committee, it became clear that the impetus for the count was just to provide the money primarily for this particular donation. And in fact, even in the original bill, with that $900,000 gone, just $100,000 would be remaining. And there wasn't any clear evidence that there was going to be additional donations coming outside of Kurt Gowdy State Park. We suggested that the department work with the TRW interim committee in order to set up this account so that it could fit in with the other types of revenue and expenditure accounts, as well as to provide a plan on how they were going to go out and fundraise and bring in funding for the entire system. So we thought that the matching fund may be a good idea, but it was premature, need a little bit more discussion, but we like the idea of keeping the money in there for Kurt Gowdy, and that's what this amendment does.
I need a discussion. Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I urge that we support the amendment. We had a lengthy discussion in the Appropriations Committee about this, and I'm just not convinced either that the account's ready to be out there. We do need to take advantage of this wonderful gift that's coming in over the next 4 years, and this does specifically still leave the Kurt Gowdy State Park deal in there. So I think it's a good amendment. I think we should support it.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Massey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises, I'm sorry. All those in favor of Senator Massey's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 30, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We're back on the bill. Senator Jennings. Nope. Senator Nicholas.
Folks, with respect to this bill, I'd urge you to go down this road cautiously. Now, we've engaged and we've developed programs for receiving matching dollars in a couple special areas. One is to build the foundation account for the University of Wyoming, and the second is to match facilities, constructions at the university and community colleges for those facilities that are in the five-year plan. In fact, we were quite specific that we're not prepared to go out and allow the university to solicit a gift, for example, to build a facility that's not in their five-year plan. The idea was to stretch our dollars to say, well, if we're going to build a college of a business, and we're going to do it anyway, but you can take our money and go out and reach gifts, then that achieves our goals. We stretch our money, and it gives donors an opportunity to match. Now, if a donor, though, came in and said, as I explained, that we would like to build a college of medicine, and we're not prepared to do it, and it's not in our budget, we don't build a college of medicine that's outside the five-year plan. Now, in this instance, this facility was not on the five-year plan for the parks. It is not in their top-rated items to construct. So, in effect, what you have is a private citizen, and I don't want to belittle the gift, nor do I want to, and I appreciate the generosity. So it's not a discussion about gifting and generosity. It's a issue of when does the state decide as a public matter that we're going to match gifts? Well, so why can't, if the city of Thermopolis wants to build a facility, then they ought to come to us and say, okay, here's $1 million. You give us $1 million. Let the communities decide the priorities. If we're going to get in this notion, then what it means is if we're going to get into this practice, it means that each and every time that I decide there's something that I'd like to see, what my preference would be, for example, is the, I think it's the resting stations that can't get funded, but a little resting station near the Laramie River. So I will give $500 if the state will give $500. Yeah, exactly. And and what a deal that was for the state. But the in the end, if the notion is that if we were to set up this account with the parks and we thought it was a good idea, what we should do is require the parks to provide to us the list of their highest priorities and the things that we would fund. And then said, okay, we'll advance half of that. And if you want to get to it more quickly, we'll give, then you can go raise money for those projects. But it's a dangerous road to go down each time a private benefit or a private generous person decides that they want something and we're prepared to fund them. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 130, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 130 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 299. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 299, sponsored by Representative Harshman, School Facilities Budget Process. An act relating to school facilities. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a federal favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senator Myers, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. Senator.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises the report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 299. There is a first standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in.
House Bill number 299, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy. That substitute number 2 for House Bill 299 do pass.
You've heard the reading of the Standing Committee Amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 299. This is the amendment that adopts the substitute bill, which is what we'd like to discuss. In order to do that, I would ask for your favorable consideration and a vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any discussion on the substitute bill? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 299, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment is passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, this is really a very simple bill. All it does, in essence, there is an issue about capital or the about major maintenance that we'll talk about separately, but the gist of the bill is to require that the Select Committee on School Facilities meet quarterly, receive reports from the School Facilities Commission, and that we begin to be more disciplined about the projects that are being sent, and that the Select Committee on School Facilities review those projects and be kept abreast of the project status. And then finally, when a budget is submitted, that the budget be submitted by the Commission to the Select Committee on School Facilities, which will then, of course, send it on to the JAC and the Governor for consideration. In that regard, it does very little to change what we're doing with respect to what the Commission's obligations are and what they're going to do. So the gist of the Select Committee's new responsibilities are at page 7. And there at page 7, you'll see that the Select Committee is to meet at least quarterly. And then turning over to the next page, the School Facilities Commission will be reviewing budgets and then and providing them to the Select Committee on for school facilities. Now, going back then, the question is, how do we put together the budgets? There is an amendment that's going to change what we have in the yellow version, but generally what we're going to do is ask for budgets in two categories, building or planning and design, and then construction. We give the all the flexibility that's heretofore been given to the commission to move projects around remains. But when projects are moved around, then they will be reporting that to the Select Committee on School Facilities. The end result, we hope, is that when you come down here and you want to know what's the status with respect to my school or your school, there will be legislators who will understand where the process is, what the considerations were, and be kept current on the movement of schools in and out of the planning process. So it creates transparency and more accountability. So, and on part of the legislature, it creates a more active and robust oversight just to know what's happening. Now, with respect to major maintenance, if you go over on page 2, there was a provision that was stuck in a year or two ago that provided that allowed that by rule and regulation, the commission otherwise, in conformance with the requirements, could move, allow major maintenance to be used for other things. If you look today, the carryover major maintenance from the last biennium was $64 million. If you add the July 1, 2007 and 2008 dollars, there's $157 million worth of major maintenance out there that we have people are both holding. Some of it's being spent, but when you go back and look at the biennium dollars moving from the last biennium to the current biennium is $64 million, it seems to us that at some time we need to insist that major maintenance dollars are used to maintain the buildings that we're going to be called upon to reconstruct or replace. There is still remains significant flexibility on what you can use the major maintenance dollars. If you look at the existing language in from lines 10 through 18 on page 2, you will see that major maintenance can be used for a great deal of things, including almost any type of repair and minor construction. And there's already an existing law, a great deal of flexibility, but we should expect and demand that major maintenance is being used for major maintenance, and these facilities that we're paying for are getting repaired, that they are being maintained. And with that explanation, there are a couple other committee amendments that are probably best to go ahead and get them adopted first before we go into the complete explanation discussion.
The committee of the clerk will read the committee of the whole amendment number 1.
House Bill 299, committee of the whole amendment number 1 to substitute bill number 2, page 5, line 23.
You've heard the reading of the committee of the whole amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, and I'd move committee of the whole amendment number 2 to House Bill 299.
You mean number 1?
Yep. Okay, excuse me. I had them in the wrong order. I'm going to move committee of the whole number 1 to House Bill 299. What this does is that when we first drafted the yellow draft, we had in mind that there would be two categories of funds that would be budgeted and then accounted for. And if you look over on page 5, the language that we first have was there would be planning and then design and construction. What this does is realign the account so you have an accounting for what would really be the level 1 and level 2 type studies. That would be planning and design, and then a separate accounting for what would be the level 3, which is construction. So it simply gets the orients, the reporting and the accounting and the budgeting consistent with level one and level two type studies, the monies that we make available for that, and then the level three that we have for construction. With that explanation, if there are no questions, I would call for the question.
Any other discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Note 1? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 299, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
House Bill Number 299, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, to substitute Bill Number 2, page 1, line 11.
You've heard the reading of the amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 299. Ladies and gentlemen, this simply catches some technical changes that as we made this, we're making these changes, the staff, our staff recommended that we pick up these additional changes and for example, the total appropriation of the foundational account will now be based upon the recommendations of the Select School Facilities Committee. Of course, they, of course, will receive the information from the Commission, but the budget passes through the Select Committee. With that explanation, I would, unless there's questions, I'd call for the question on that amendment.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 299, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 has passed. The Committee of the Whole, we're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, we'd stand for questions. The committee and the co-sponsors, in the end, all we're doing is trying to get a little more regimented. The School Facilities Commission, their role will not change. The Select Committee will have to meet a couple extra times a year in order to keep better abreast of what's happening and to keep current on the requests, the spending, and the projects so that when the appropriation process begins, they will be in a position to understand the budget, be able to defend the budget, and go forward. Stand for questions.
Questions, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I rise not for a question, but I rise in strong support of the bill. I know there's been some controversy in regard to making these kind of changes in this area. I would simply say for the sake of expediency, I agree with most all of what's been said by the chairman of the appropriations. You can see from the nature of the bill and the amendments, there's a lot of consideration been given, a lot of work been put into it. I would say that we welcome the expertise in regard to the budgeting process that's set forth by the appropriations committee. And as chairman of the Select Committee on School Facilities, I think this bill will do much not only to improve the communication between the Select Committee and the school facilities, but also bring forth some vehicles for accounting and for tracking some of these monies that we can have a better idea what we can bring to the floor and share with you in regard to what's going on in that area. So with that, I give it my strong support and hope that you would also.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with favorable recommendation on House Bill 299, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 299 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 61. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 61, sponsored by the Management Council, Revisor's Bill, and Act relating to revision of inadvertent errors. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. President?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 61. House Bill 61, the revisor bill, which I think everyone's pretty familiar with. It's a bill we have every session, and it is used to catch and correct errors, correcting statutory references, languages from errors and omissions, and repealing those sections that have been fully executed. There are the main change, you might say, would be that they're bringing out, it would be on page 5, those on line 10, those statutes had been repealed by another bill, and that fine is just written back in this section. Then when you move forward to the bottom of that page, and some on page 6, it refers to tuition payments and things in pupils that attend schools in another state. That mainly refers to border areas where there is either not a high school in that area that's convenient for this student, or else one that it is more convenient for those to go out of state to a high school, and that spells out how the tuition is paid. Later on in the bill, on page 11, 12, 13, we're removing the bucking horse from our state parks permits, where they've changed them from the annual bucking horse daily permits to just annual daily permits, and that's just deleting that through those sections. Like I say, it's just pretty much correcting errors, and I ask your support. I will have if there's no question on that part, I do have an amendment.
The reading clerk will read the amendment.
House Bill 61, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 17, line 22.
You've heard the reading of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 61. And what this does is on page 17, it just adds a word before borrow, the prepayment penalty provision imposed a charge if the condition, and what it is, it's a condition that wrote, and it's just set in there. It was left out somewhere before, and just clarifying it so that the penalty is still in there. I'll answer questions, or else I call for the question on the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 61, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed Committee of the Whole, and we're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 61, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 61 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
118.
I'm sorry, 118.
House Bill number 118, sponsored by Representative Pedersen, Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, and act relating to institutional funds. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 118, and I'll take you through the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, what this is presently Wyoming has adopted the Uniform Management of Institutional Funds Act, which is UMIFA. And UMIFA was the original act was adopted by the National Conference of the Uniform State Laws Committee, NACUSL. Back in the 70s, Wyoming thereafter adopted, and we've been living in under that Uniform Act since then. Recently, in 2006, the NACUSL went out and adopted a new, more modern version of the Institutional Funds Act called the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. And this is an act that will adopt the new UPM, or the Uniform Prudent Management Act, into Wyoming law. The principal reason for the changes that came along the committee deal with how the original act addressed expenditures of monies, the interest off the account. Under the Uniform Act that we have in place now, there is a concept called historic dollar value. The historic dollar value would be if you give a gift to, for example, the University of Wyoming, suppose you give a $1 million gift. Under the old act, that would be deemed, the historic dollar value would be sort of the corpus of that gift. And so if the gift value dropped below $1 million, so if you had it invested in stocks and the value drops down to $600,000, then all of the income off of the that's generated from the lowered, reduced value of the corpus of it will have to go back into the corpus, and you couldn't expend the interest off of it until it gets back to the historic dollar value. Now, it's a belief that most people who gave gifts probably didn't intend that, because if you give a gift, for example, of $1 million to support a program, a charity, and you want all the interest spent on it, the donors would typically say, you know, look, folks, if I don't want you to go into the corpus, however, if the corpus investments go down, I still want the income off of it to be used for gift purposes to advance the charities. The University Foundation is experiencing this problem right now, where some of the donors set up programs years ago, and now with the stock market down, the corpus value, the historic dollar value, the endowment value is now below the historic dollar value, and so they have to shut off the programs for the scholarships for a particular program, and most likely, and the donors did not anticipate this. What this then does is it distinguishes between the endowment fund, which would be the sort of the corpus that you see on the bottom of page 2, and the income off of it. And what it allows a donor to do is, to, in the absence of giving clear instructions, it's assumed that the endowment is sort of an inviolate amount. However, all the interest could be spent even if the historic dollar value of the gift declined. There are some other things that the Act does. It brings into concepts which were taken out of the trust code and some other things, particularly the Uniform Prudent Investor Act concepts, and we have now adopted the Uniform Prudent Investor Act in Wyoming. It takes some of those modern provisions and incorporates them into the due document. Some of the concepts that come out of the revised Model Nonprofit Corporation Act are brought in to ensure that now the investment guidance is that of the folks that are overseeing it is to act in good faith and with care and the ordinary as an ordinary prudent person in the position would exercise under similar circumstances. So it gives better guidance to directors, and we think it, and we heard, for example, from some of the directors that are with the University of Wyoming Foundation, other foundations, who indicated that they felt this would give them better guidance, more modern, and it was a step in the right direction. There is a provision in the NACUSL Act that is optional, and you'll see that over on page 11. The optional language addresses the issue of whether or not you can expend into the endowment fund. And once again, if a grantor sets up an endowment for somebody, for a project, you say, I want to fund this scholarship. What happens on a year where you have no income and your endowment is lower in value than the historic dollar value? Can you continue to give the scholarship that year? And, of course, the Act does provide that if the grantor, if the if you, when you give the money, you put a restriction on that no endowment fund is to be spent, then that controls over the Act. If you say, I don't want any expenditure to occur if the count falls below the historic dollar value, that is a wish that controls over this. But in the absence of guidance from the person giving the gift, the Act allows for expenditure of some of the corpus, but it goes on to say if you expend more than 7% of the fair market value on the endowment, that's deemed to be imprudent. Now, our committee took a look at that, and we concluded that that is probably too high for the conservative Wyoming values, and so we decided that it should be 5%, and that is the subject of the standing committee amendment, which I'd ask to be read in.
House Bill 118, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 11, line 13.
You've heard the reading of the amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to House Bill 118, and what this does is take the 7% that's in the optional language for the NACUSL draft and lowers that presumption from 7% to 5%. If there's no discussion or questions, I would call for the question.
Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 111, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, that's an explanation of the bill, and I'd ask for questions if there are any.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. Oh. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand this and where your amendment went in. Senator from Laramie. On the one side, you're saying, as I understand the amendment, that creates a rebuttable presumption of imprudence. And then as I'm reading it, you go over to the other section of the amendment, creates a presumption of prudence for an expenditure of amount less than that. I got to have a little more explanation, I think, before I go there. On the one side, you're saying you're creating a rebuttable presumption of imprudence. You're using the same percentages. And then on the other side, you're saying that you're creating a rebuttable presumption of prudence. Would you elaborate and try to educate me a little more on that?
Would anyone else like to speak on the bill? You ready for the question?
No,
Senator Nicholas.
I'm just gathering. I study this in and out, and I had it down, and I'll see if I can get it. And I might have to review it. But generally speaking, we are allowing entities to create a spending policy, much like we have for our spending policy for the Permanent Mental Trust Fund, where you could set up and said our policy is we're going to spend 5% of the earnings. So 1 year you create more earnings, and then you might hit a year where there are no earnings, but your corpus may or may not have gone up. And the what we're telling these folks is now you look at the entire investment. Look at all of the stocks that you have in your account, sort of evaluate why your values are down if there's no income, and absent a prohibition by the gifting entity, you deem it in the best interest of the trust to meet its stated goals, you can expend, you can appropriate from the corpus up to or a portion of the corpus. However, when you go into that corpus, we're going to assume that if you exceed now 5%, there's a presumption which can be rebutted that it was imprudent, so that if you expend beyond the 5%, then you could still do that if, for example, the gift was expressed that you can spend part of the endowment, or if there is another justification for meeting the intention of the original grant that goes there. And that deals with the first 5%. And now I'm summing up the explanation for the second 5%. And what it does is says is it does not create a presumption that you can spend up to 5%. So that saying that it's presumptively that if you go over 5%, that that presumption creates it, but there's not a corresponding presumption that you can spend the 5%. You have to justify that based upon the prudence of the investment and what you're doing, the purposes for the grant. And I think I have that right, and I'm going to review it again tonight to make sure I've got it right.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I understand what you're doing. I guess one of the questions I would have, and maybe it should be fixed, as I read this, you're talking about all of the endowments created and so on. I know there are many that you cannot contact who made the endowment and who did all of that. But why would, in the cases where you were able to contact the giver, would you not secure the permission to expend from the corpus? Why would you not want to do that in cases where you can? And I understand there's a lot of cases you may not be able to. But it would seem to me if somebody gave $1 million and said, spend this much and don't spend any more, but didn't make those presumptions in the document, they were locatable. No, it would seem to me to be prudent, again, to use the word, that they be contacted for permission to make expenditures outside of that realm.
Mr. Chairman, in those instances where the gifting party provided a written instrument saying this is my gift and this is my expectation, this is what I want, then they're required to follow it. But generally, the time of the strings on the gift are generally established at the time the gift is made. And the Act does not require that you go back and secure new instructions. So if the gifter said, look, I want my funds to be maintained and I want the endowment to be maintained at this level, then if it falls below that, you're going to have to stop spending until it comes back to that endowment level. If the person said, I want to set up a gift or a program where I want to give a $500 donation to people from Gillette who are pilots to go to school, then the assumption is that you want the gift to go each and every year. And if that's the only instruction, then what we're going to do is say, adapt your spending policy, and some years your corpus will go up, you'll grow your corpus. But if you get a situation like we're seeing today, where you may have grown your corpus twice beyond the original gift value, but because the stock market went down and cut your endowment in half, it may be that those stocks, you know, in a year or two are going to bounce back, and if you've got a fund that's $100,000 and you're now at $99,000 of investments, and you assess it, you could, in the absence of instruction, take the $500 out of the corpus that year to fund that practice. Now, the is it prudent for those institutions to, where there is doubt, to go back to their gifting? Absolutely. They should do that because it's a good policy. But we won't require them to go back and reestablish the gift. We go back and look at what the gift was. Now, incidentally, with respect to the gifts that we are giving as a state to the foundation, these rules generally don't apply because in our case, when we gave up, we do the matching program, we give statutory restrictions and instructions which supersede these. And in our case, we are looking for minimum endowment amounts, and they're going to have to live with those.
Senator Larson.
I guess the problem I'm having, and you said, would it be, I don't think you used the word prudent, but proper for the ones who are spending this or who had given the gift, would it be proper for them to go back and contact the giver? And I think you said it probably would be, but it isn't required. I guess my question is, in times like we're having now, and 90% of the time, nobody would have ever thought that the income was going to go down. But we have the same problem with our permanent mineral trust fund going down. And if it couldn't match that, it would seem to me that all these rules, prudence, rebuttable presumption should be after an attempt was made to carry out the wishes of the person who originally established it. That seems to me that would be the proper way to do that. A little more cumbersome perhaps, and I don't think there's anything with doing that. I hate to see it being done automatically without, in those cases where they can be contacted, that they are first contacted, the person who gave the gift, and say, we're now underwater. Is it your wish to discontinue what it's gone for a year or two till it builds up, or do you want us to go to the 5% or the 7% or whatever rule you happen to be? And that's the problem I'm having.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I understand that problem, and I think that as we change the rules of the game for management of funds like this, that those were concerned. But if you sat back and said, okay, let's require that any person that gave funds consent to this so that you go back and look at the original gift document, there's no instruction. And imagine if you now are on that board and you are now being held to the standard of a legal standard to invest in accordance with law. And so you write a letter to Mr. X, who is in China. You think he's alive, and you just can't find him. What do you do? What do you do if you were to write a letter or try to commute somebody and they say, I don't care? Do you have to get it in writing? It seems to me that the concern you have is, while it's understandable, and there's just really no way to address it, because if you're on the foundation or you're on a board making these decisions, you need to know what the standard is. So you've got a standard where the donor gave an instruction, and you have one where he didn't. If he didn't, the new standards apply. If he did, the gift applied. And what the Act assumes is that this is, if a person didn't give an instruction, it assumes and makes a presumption that when I give $100,000 for to fund a scholarship, that I'd be willing to spend up to 5% in a year like this, as long as everything was invested well and things were going well, that I would still rather the scholarship be given than none at all. And that if the grantor didn't want that, and if he wanted to make sure his endowment always sustained the historic gift level, that he would have said so in the instrument, because that's not a new thing. There are many people, when they give gifts, address that issue. So in the absence of addressing it, We presume people are going to do what's reasonable and that the people on the chair or the charities running are going to exercise reasonableness.
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, one last time, I think it's very easy to do. I think all we would have to do is put something in there that says after first attempting to contact the donor, you could then go to five or seven. We've arbitrarily decided five or seven. Started out seven, and all of a sudden we've now decided five, which I agree with, by the way. But it could be three, or it could be two. And I think all it would have to say, after first attempting to contact the giver, it would then be assumed that 5 or 7% was there. Let's move on. I don't want to belabor it, but that's the problem I'm having.
Any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 118, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 118 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for consideration, up for consideration is House Bill 85. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 85, sponsored by Representative Blake. Motor Vehicle Chain Law, an act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation, House Bill 85, Motor Vehicle Chain Law. I ask that the first standing committee amendment be read in at this time.
House Bill 85, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 24.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 85 and ask for your aye vote on this. All we did was clean up a grammatical error on the bottom of end of page 2, line 24, took out the word B, didn't need to be there, so ask for that we hear your favorable vote at this time.
We're on the committee. We're on the standing committee amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 85, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has passed. Senator Von Flatern, we're back on the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, explain this bill. Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 85, the Motor Vehicle Chain Law, is simply to put some teeth into the chain laws that we have in the state of Wyoming now. Right now, we have issues where the roads get snowy, the chain law goes into effect, the commercial carriers, all they're doing is having, they are slipping and sliding on places like the Summit, the Sisters, Teton Pass, the rig ends up sideways, closing the highway down for a good period of time, and the officer has no way of citing them because they has the chains on the vehicle because they're just hanging on the vehicle. This is just saying you've got to put the chains on and use them, and then putting some teeth into the laws on that, Mr. Chairman. We are just increasing the penalties. And just a note on the violations for our neighboring state to the south for not carrying them, or for not having the chain law or the chains on when the chain law is in effect, is a $500 fine plus $157 surcharge. And then if you get a subsequent fine for blocking the highway, it's a $1,000 fine plus a $313 surcharge, Mr. Chairman. So what we're doing here is getting some teeth into the chain laws. And if you have any questions, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, the first question, are teeth and chains, aren't they hard on the asphalt? But more serious, let's see. I think was shortly after statehood this bill came before the first time, but then the last time was several years ago, and at that time there were not enough turnouts, not enough places to pull out to get chained up. Now, has that changed in the last 20 years?
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That very question was brought up in the committee, and yes, there are. There's several more on the interstate and several more planned, and they'll either be just a widening of the shoulders on the two-lane where they can fit it in. Otherwise, there were several more in just the last 5 years. I forgot I didn't have my notes as to where they exactly are located, but they are.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Platen. Senator Von Vasey.
Von Vasey. That's good. So if you enhance these penalties and there's planned turnoffs, the trucker can say, well, I plan to put my chains on in the planned turnoff.
Any other comment? Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, I was getting going there pretty good there for a minute. The problem is now is that a lot of the people, not only commercial drivers, but even some of the smaller vehicles, just don't pay any attention to the signs. When there's a sign up that says, you know, the chain law is in effect, whatever, is right on by. And if the judge asks them, well, were you equipped? And they say, yeah, we were equipped. They were hanging on the side of the truck, you know. I didn't have them on the tires, but I had them on the side. And that's been the problem. So we need to just tighten up. That's not a pun. The law.
Any other comment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Platen's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 85, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
House Bill 85 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 267. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 267, sponsored by Representative Cohey, Commercial Motor Vehicles Definition, and Act Relating to Commercial Motor Vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Platen, Senator Von Platen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Platen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation. House Bill 267, Commercial Motor Vehicle Definition, and apparently I'll be here to explain it.
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was really just an update based on a review of our commercial motor vehicle definitions as compared to the federal government for interstate commercial travel. Found out that we didn't have our definitions quite written in compliance or in slight conflict, and mostly the wording was a little bit different. It changes nothing in how we operate. It changes nothing in how the laws are applied. It just complies, matches language. I can tell you that page 217 through 19, I think the language is horrible. I actually was going to amend it in committee, and they said, geez, don't mess with it. It's how it's written everywhere else in every other state. Let's just leave it that way. And because it says the same thing I wanted to say, I just don't like it. But if you go through it, all it does was update them, bring them in compliance. Anybody driving in any state will read the same language, and that is really it. There is no change in how we do business. There's no change in we didn't create any new laws, rules. It's just an update and bring it in compliance, and I ask for your favorable vote.
Any other comment on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Platen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 267, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 267 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 191. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill number 191, sponsored by Representative Cohey, Motor Carrier Transportation Contracts, and Act Relating to Motor Carrier Transportation Contracts.
You've heard the reading.
It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Platen, Senator Von Platen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Platen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, when the Committee of the Whole rises, I ask to do so with a favorable report, a favorable consideration of House Bill 191, Motor Carrier Transportation Contracts, And to explain this bill, I guess it's me again. What this does is it exempts motor carriers from what they call an indemnification clause within contracts. So if trucking company number one wants to go to work for ABC, big company, they sends in a certificate of insurance. They say, yes, you meet all our limits of liability, great. But by the way, sign this contract. A lot of it's access contracts, as in when they go to a refinery. You sign quite an elaborate contract about safety issues and equipment you'll have on your truck, not having your truck, so forth. But then there'll be this little signature line that says you'll indemnify the ABC big company by saying that anything the trucking company causes and damages, the trucking company insurance will pay for it. But anything that somebody else, third party, whoever, even including the, let's say, refinery causes and damages, if you're somehow involved or around there, it's your fault too. So if you want to work for them, of course you have to sign it. So what this does is say that motor carriers, go to page 1, line 13, notwithstanding any other provisions of law, any provisions, clauses, covenants, or agreements contained in a motor carrier transportation contract that purports to indemnify, defend, or hold harmless, or has the effect of indemnifying, defending, or holding harmless the indemnity from or against any liability for loss or damage resulting from its own negligence or intentional acts of omissions against the public policy of this state. So in other words, you can sign that line, and if you go into other states, you're held to that contract. But that particular indemnification no longer holds in this state in the world of truck motor carrier transportation. So that is the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee number one amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
House Bill number 191, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee number 1 to House Bill 191. What this does is goes in and then takes out page 1, line 4, delete an exception and put exceptions, grammaticals. Page 1, line 14, after in, delete the comma. Page 1, line 15, delete through affecting. And then page 1, line 16, delete that, insert, or a related access agreement under which the motor carrier transport enters on property for the purpose of loading, unloading, or transporting property to the extent that that contract purports to indemnify, defend, or hold harmless. That would be the end of page 1. Page 2, after line 18, F subsection, delete balance of line. Page 2, line 19, delete. There's a lot of different agreements about storage. This thing also had words in there, including but not limited to storage of property. Many other laws govern that, so they wanted that out of there because there could be separate agreements that we'd be trespassing upon. And then on page 2, line 23, after the period, insert, as used in this section, motor carrier transportation contract shall not include the Uniform Intermodal Interchange and Facilities Agreement administered by the Intermodal Association of North America or other agreements. There is an outfit which most railroads, trucking companies, and sea container organizations operate under. It has the same indemnification language or avoidance of in their agreements, and they didn't want this bill to interfere with that. So that's also included in their ask for your favorable vote on amendment, Standing Committee number 1 amendment.
We're on the amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Platerd's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 191, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question so I'm sure I understand this. Are we talking about, and in the business that I'm in, I have to sign master contracts, and I may not like the language, particularly on the indemnification side, so I try to renegotiate, but if I'm unable to, and they ask me to indemnify them, then this is going to say they don't that it's null and void. Am I correct in understanding that?
Senator Von Platerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, it won't. This is for transportation, trucking, motor carrier transportation contracts only. I would agree that we probably need it for all these little service companies in the oil field mining business because that's still there. But I will tell you that, and I wasn't expecting to present this bill or I would have kept my notes, There is a whole section in there for the oil field exemptions for this very issue. and it covers, I remember it covers drilling. There's about five things that it voids indemnification clauses for, and I would have to find that again. But this is only for motor carrier transportation.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question in trying to understand it, I, as explained, I think I agree with it, but are we saying then that the two private parties have a contract and the state then is saying that part of it is not enforceable? Are we going into private contracts? And then I guess that part really bothers me that the state, and I understand that the contracts may be kind of forced on one side, but is this what this bill really does, and say regardless of the private contract, part of it is not enforceable?
Senator Von Platen.
Exactly. It should have been done more under an unfair practice act, because the size of the particular companies we're talking about that demand these kind of signatures and indemnification makes it very difficult for the smaller companies to have to turn them down, since they're the major employer of these service companies, and in this case the trucking companies. And I have no better answer than to say yes, in that case it does stand in between.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Von Platen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 191, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 191 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 179. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 179, sponsored by Representative Helenin. Phase 2 study I-80 tolling, an act relating to highway funding. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with the following, with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Platen, Senator Von Platen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Platen?
When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 179, Phase 2 Study I-80 Tolling. And to explain this bill, I call on myself again. What this bill does, last session we had a Phase 1 study of the possibilities of tolling I-80. This is not a tolling bill. I want everybody to understand we're not asking to go toll the highway. We're saying now we need more numbers. We got some pretty good numbers last time that said it looks like you can do it, and you can do all those improvements on the highway with just this revenue from the tolling. But it didn't get into specifics like where are you going to toll it, how much are you really going to charge, and what kind of diversion of traffic are you going to cause going around I-80 because you have a toll on it. So taking all that into consideration, we said, well, we need that next level of review. About the last thing the interim group did last year was to get the final report. So we really didn't have time to formulate legislation to make this next study go. So this took this on as a personal bill, one of the representatives from the other body and myself, to get this going. It really lines out what we're would have requested from management as the next step in interim studies. So this really goes in there a little more specific. It's more like a request for proposal is what this bill is. It could have been a lot simpler with very few details, but it does talk about roadway safety and constructing of other lanes, where the tolls will be, how much are you going to charge, what is the impact on our federal highway funding, if any impact. By the way, we've gotten a letter since that says there really won't be any impact, a reduction in federal funding to our state because we are tolling the interstate, but what it'll allow is to take that same amount of money and now spread it on other interstates. Define the financing scenarios. Do we bond it and start today, and in 8 years we've created lanes both ways across the state, or do we just do stuff as money comes in? Those are under consideration in this. Public outreach, making sure that the consultants have meetings with all the towns and businesses along the route that might be affected and to get their feedback. And then a review of tolling technology. Hopefully the little transponders, you never stop, you just drive through. So all that's contained in the bill, and the funding will come from federal highway funds that we have now that are set aside for research reports and evaluations, and are specifically for that. We're not taking money away from money that can be used for construction. There is a standing committee number one amendment. I'd like that read in at this time.
House Bill number 179, standing committee amendment number one to engross copy, page 2, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I move standing committee number one to House Bill 179. Explain that. Page 2, line 8, we just, that language seemed to be a little bit elaborate, didn't really say what we wanted it to, so we just turned page 2, line 8 and 9 and just made that say constructing of additional lanes to be shared by all vehicles. And on the next section, we talk about constructing, page 2, line 12, constructing additional lanes that would be restricted to certain vehicles. So they'll look at having a truck-only lane or just building more lanes and everybody can use them, and to find out how that moves traffic or doesn't move traffic. So that's really the amendment, is just a cleanup on those couple of paragraphs. And I ask for your favorable vote on the standing committee number one.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 179, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 1, I'm sorry, Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 179 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Von Flatern.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just asked for the question, and I'll stand for questions.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 179, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 179 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 162. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 162, sponsored by Representative Millen, State Employees Retirement Military Credit, an act relating to state employee retirement. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Nicholas?
And I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that do so with the favorable recommendation for House Bill 162. And for an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to Representative Senator. You started getting a little shocked there. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 162, State Employee Retirement Military Credit. It's just for the military, the folks that are serving in the military that are and they're deployed, that they have an opportunity to have their retirement credits and paid for while they're serving in the military. Looks like last year there were 43 individuals who took advantage of the military funding in the public system, and there was around 177.86 paid for a month for a member on the public pension fund, Mr. Chairman, and basically that's what we're doing with the bill. It's just stating that on or after July 30, 2010, each state agency, department, or institution, including the university, community college, shall estimate the amount of for the credits for the subsection of this biennium, Mr. Chairman, and it's simply to take care of the retirement credits for those serving overseas and in the military.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 162, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 162 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again in about 10 minutes.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
Thank you.
Committee of the Whole, come back to order. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 144. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill number 144, sponsored by Representative Wallace. Transparency in Government, and Act Relating to Government Information. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Report back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move with the committee the whole rise of the report. It does so with a favorable recommendation. Do pass for House Bill 144. There's a standing committee amendment. I'd ask to be read in.
House Bill number 144, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I move standing committee amendment number 1, House Bill 144. Ladies and gentlemen, Appropriations Committee has one very clear, rule we live by. We don't do select committees. And so, partly for the benefit of everybody else, but mostly for fear that we might get put on them. So this amendment takes the select committee out of this bill. And otherwise, it's a great bill. Our CIO looked at the bill and liked it, and we'd urge your support. With that in mind, I'll turn it over to Senator Case to explain it, and then he can call for the vote when he wants to.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill about transparency in government. As it was mentioned earlier, it originally had a select committee that would kind of help to make transparency happen. It also had a lot about putting our financial and other information on the web. This is public information that would be accessible to our citizens and organized and be easily available. The latter goal is still in there. The select committee's out, and that's probably a good thing, Mr. Chairman. That was basically the subject of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, a lot of states do a much better job of putting public information on available to their citizens on the World Wide Web, whether it's financial, whether it's expenditures, whether it's taxes collected. The public obviously has a right to know. We have that information. It is available to the public, but it's not always easy to get. And the goal of this whole project is to, over time, make it easier for the public to obtain that information electronically. Mr. Chairman, partly the reason I'm a co-sponsor on this bill is I chair the Select Committee on Legislative Technology for the Senate side. The House prime sponsor is on that committee on the House side. We didn't sponsor any legislation in the committee, but this is a result, at least substantially, due to that committee's work. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, the front part of the bill is some definitions, and if you read the definitions, you'll just see that it defines the department is the division of ANI, so that's what we're talking about here. The state entity that participates in this, it's state agencies. That's who participate. There is a whole section of information
On page 3, it starts at the bottom of page 2, but goes on to page 3. This is information that is not to be publicly disseminated, and it makes sure that it's not publicly disseminated. And it's the same information that's protected now and not allowed to be public. You know, it might be workers' compensation benefits. It might be juvenile services, that kind of thing, that are protected now and need to be protected under this act. It does create, at the bottom of page 3, the Wyoming Public Finance website, and it's administered by the Department of A&I, of course. Mr. Chairman, and on page 4, you can see what the purpose of this website is. The purpose of the Wyoming Public Finance website is to permit Wyoming taxpayers to view and track the use of taxpayer dollars by making participating state entities' public financial information available on the Internet. To allow a person who has the Internet access to use the website without paying a fee, Mr. Chairman, and to allow the public to search public financial information on the Wyoming Public Financial website using criteria established by the department. And you'll notice that on page 4, line 14, the bill says, by the department in consultation with the committee. Of course, that's removed by the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman. Also, its job is to provide access to financial reports, financial audits, budgets, et cetera, et cetera. And it's to have a unique and simple website address that our citizens can know about, to be directly accessible via a link from the main page of the official state website, to include other links as necessary. Line 9, it says the department, again, the Department of A&I, shall, and the words be responsible for have been removed by the Standing Committee Amendment, line 11. It now reads, establish and maintain the website, including the provision of equipment, resources, and personnel as necessary. Line 15 now reads, maintain an archive of all information posted to the website. Line 18, coordinate and process the receipt and posting of public financial information from participating state entities. Line 22, these are things that the department may do, and it's these are things that I guess we were hoping will grow into. As more information is available and be able to made for the public, you can see at the top of page 6, there's a reference to select committee. That's those three lines are removed from the bill. So two little I now becomes single I, and three little I becomes double I. And remember, these are permissive, and the words on line 9, in consultation with the committee, obviously removed. These are the permissive things, but you can see it's kind of an evolving, growing goal to get more information on the website. Finally, Mr. Chairman, line 22, page 7, a participating state entity shall permit the public to view the public financial information via the website. And F, not later than January 1st, 2010, the website shall be operational, so about a year away. You know, and we kind of expect it to grow small and get bigger as more stuff has been able to put onto this. Page 8, line 7, there's an insert from the back. It's actually an insert from page 11 because you'll see a lot of the back of the bill is removed. But if you look on page 11, lines 19 through 21, that's now moved up to be the new G on page 8. There's rulemaking authority, department. The language in the bill on page 8 says, after consultation with the committee, there's no committee, so the department shall adopt rules to require the state agencies to participate and to define the term public financial information, to establish procedures. And then on page 9, part B, Mr. Chairman, this is, again, there's the words after consultation with the committee, and there's other changes in that paragraph. That paragraph at the top of page 9 reads in its entirety now, the department may adopt rules to require a participating entity to list the following information regarding expenditures made by a person under contract with a participating entity. So it allows the department to make, it's permissive, allows them to adopt rules with respect to contracts, and you can see the information about the contract, really the purpose, the expenditure dates, the dates they were made, stuff that actually is available through the auditor's office. Nobody's really creating any new burdens here. It's just that we're going to make this information available electronically. If you look on page 10, Article 5 is struck from the bill, Mr. Chairman, except for the part at the bottom of the page 11 that was moved to the earlier section. Mr. Chairman, I'm almost done. Everything on line 12, or page 12, is deleted down to section 3, which now becomes section 2. And as appropriation, it's a big whopper, so you better sit down, Mr. Chairman. It's $12,300. Stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've got to move the standing committee amendment. It's been moved. I call for the question.
Any further discussion on the amendment? We're on standing committee amendment number 1. Question being called. All those in favor, Senator Nicholas' motion to adopt the standing committee amendment for House Bill 144, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a couple of questions in when this bill was debated in committee and stuff. Did anybody ask how they were, the procedures they're going to use to get this information on the web, how many man hours it was going to take, whether they were going to let contracts for people to do it, or just the logistics of how it's going to be done, and is the Department of Ed going to be under this?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can tell you this, and this is why I don't know whether I made the right choice on voting aye for this bill or not. I think it's a great idea, but we asked the CIO if he had to implement it tomorrow, and his answer was, well, it would cost us $1 billion to implement this tomorrow, because you're going to have a lot of data entry things. And I think, you know, the important thing about that we have to look at it is that it's all subject to future appropriations, so we're going to be able to control that. And I think that this is going to be more of an evolution process, where as we get new programs and departments get in new programs, that the programs and the data entry that they're doing in those will, you know, more or less work toward this. Because I think it's going to take a long time to do this, because we don't have $1 billion to implement it, and we don't have that many man hours. But all that data gets into the computer systems at one point in time. So what we have to do is, as these things evolve and as we get different programming, we need to be cognizant that that's one of the goals that we have to have and try to move it toward that transparency. Because if you were going to try to do it overnight, frankly, you just couldn't afford it.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to pretend that this is going to be costless. But, Mr. Chairman, I think there's a great example of where we've implemented. It's been very cost-effective. It's done a good job, and the public has benefited. It's in our own legislative website and system. And people have got more than a couple gray hairs on me. Remember that when we were first in the legislature, there was no connection, no publicly available information. These sheets were all that the public knew about how to participate in the legislative process. And you remember we had...
Senator Case, could you move close to the microphone?
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. These sheets were all that the public had on how to participate in the process. Now, of course, the web has been made available to them. Communication with their elected officials has been made easier. We've cut down on tremendous amounts of paper. And in the end, I think everyone says not only has it been a great benefit to the public... Probably in the long run, it's going to be a tremendous cost savings with all the lack of the need to move the paper around, and our public is going to be better informed. When you think about it, we do everything by computer now. We use spreadsheets. We all this information is on paper, but electronically derived and printed on paper. There's no, the simplest form, the same basic information can be just posted on a website. At the same time that the paper version is produced, and over time we will find great success and even cost savings if we can move major amounts of information. And I'm not promising immediate cost savings, but you can see how it's benefited this legislature because you've been here and you've seen it. The same thing can happen for state government. And just to make it easier for our public to know this information is a very good thing, Mr. Chairman, and a step in the right direction. Because right now, without driving down to Cheyenne, you can't get a lot of this information, and that's not right.
Further discussion, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another place that we are already doing this is if you go to the Oil and Gas Commission website, for the last several years, they've been putting the well logs, the permits, just about everything that's not confidential, they're putting on the website. And they're caught up. They've been caught up several years, and they're working backwards now. And these are all documents that have been stored in in great big rooms of lots and lots of files, and the only way that you could do any research on it was to drive to Casper and do it. That's an award-winning website. They've gotten, you know, awards from around the country on it, and that's a good model to go. On your education question, we published the funding model on the website. People could log on to it, look at it. Teachers could log on, look at it, and know what the funding model said should happen in that clear down to the school. So I think we're on our way. I think this bill keeps us going, and I think we should pass it.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I think it ought to be on the web. All I'm saying is when we did the stuff for the legislature and for our constituents out there, there were appropriations. We just didn't say like this, here's $12,000, now this is what we expect. If you recall, and I will stand corrected if I'm wrong, we put appropriations with it at every step of the way. So I guess that's a problem I have with it. If we're going to do it, let's just stand up and put an appropriation with it for the next year, look to see how far they've come, and then assess it, and then go back just like we did with the process we did with setting up what we do now, put another appropriation with it for the next 2 years. That's all I'm saying is I don't think it's a responsible way to do it. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just remind the body that this is a lighter version. Originally had a select committee and that was going to oversee and push this. That's toned down. There are two categories of things. There are things that the Division of A&I has to do, and they're very small and very limited. And there are things that they may do. That's how we're going to put our toe in the water. And I'm reminded that the $12,300 that's in the bill, the purpose of that is to consolidate existing information. It's not to create new websites or whatever. We actually have a lot of websites in the state of Wyoming. But if we can begin to have a systematic pulling together of this information, connect the links, the first phase probably can be done very cheaply. I might eat these words next year. You know, I might. And they might come in and say, we got into that and that was a hornet's nest and we never got it done. Well, I hope they don't. But I think it's better to start and say, here's some money. Check out what's out there. Consolidate what you can. It's permissive if you want to go farther and if you can afford it. If not, you know where they're going to be next year. They're not. If they can get more in their budget, they're going to get more in their budget, and they'll be down here trying to get it. I hope you'll pass the bill.
Any further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 144, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 144 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 174. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 174, sponsored by Representative Yagi. Provisional Opportunity Hathaway Scholarships, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, DeCarrier, Massey, Von Flateren. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Jennings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask when the Committee of the Whole rises to do so with a favorable report on House Bill 174. Mr. Chairman, the referred amendment that's on there was an error, and I'd like to withdraw that amendment right now and then introduce or yield to Senator Massey for an explanation of the bill. I'd like to withdraw that amendment without any objection.
The amendment was passed by the Education Committee. I don't know if a single individual can withdraw it.
Mr. Chairman, we went back and checked the records. It is a mistake. In the book, in the committee room, it was filed, do not pass. Somehow or another, it got out. If when the chairman's here and not the vice chair is here tomorrow, if he feels like that we are in error, we'll bring it back on second reading, if we make it that far. Or we can ask all the education people.
Senator Case.
Kind of a point of order. I guess they could withdraw it, but you could just kill it. Just move it and then kill it. But
okay, Mr. Chairman, let's do that. Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the error, and ask everybody to vote no.
The clerk will read the Standing Committee Amendment.
House Bill Number 174, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 2.
You've heard the discussion of the Standing Committee Amendment. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment on House Bill 174, please say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
The Standing Committee Amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, my dad, Senator, back there for the good solution to that. I do yield to Senator Massey for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill in front of you deals with the career part of the Hathaway Scholarship Program. As a reminder, there are four levels for the Hathaway Scholarship Program: the honors level, performance, opportunity, and then career. The first three are designed to give 4 years of scholarship assistance to students to go to a community college or the University of Wyoming with the idea that they'll eventually get a bachelor's degree. The career is the fourth level. And essentially, it provides the same amount of money as the opportunity, the third-level scholarship. However, it's only given for 2 years. And the idea is for the student to be able to use it to get a certificate at a community college. Recently, the Department of Education and several of our school districts have embarked upon a program in which they're eliminating the distinction between vocational education programs and academic or college prep tracks. And essentially, what they're trying to do is to encourage students to follow their interest, so that they don't necessarily get a certain stigma or reputation by either being in college track or vocational education. And in fact, what's happening in this program in high schools is that those students who are following their interest in doing career technical and education programs are also encountering high-level math and English and language skills and other things that prepare them for the top performance level in the scholarship program. So the consultant that's been assisting in developing this program in our high schools suggested that we get, or that we rename and rethink, the career scholarship line. Because right now it just simply implies that those folks who are interested in vocational education take that. In reality, it's anybody who doesn't necessarily perform up to the standards of the first three should be encouraged to go to a community college and continue their education. So as a result, Mr. Chairman, that's the impetus behind the bill that's in front of folks, and it changes the name of the Career Scholarship Program to Provisional Opportunity. And the idea behind it is that it still provides a 2-year scholarship to this student, just like the Career Scholarship does, but it lets them know that if they perform at an acceptable level, that after 2 years, they'll essentially be given the same opportunity as those with an opportunity scholarship. And that's what folks will see in the new language on page 2, that after the first 2 years, if they have maintained a GPA of 2.25, they'll be given an opportunity for 2 more years after that. That's the same possibilities that we provide to those who have an opportunity scholarship. And they can use those additional 2 years to get an additional certificate, to get a associate's degree, or if they want to, they can enroll at the University of Wyoming, and provided that they continue to meet certain benchmarks and performance standards, they can pursue a bachelor's degree. So the two purposes behind this bill is to change career to provisional opportunity and to give those who have received that scholarship the opportunity that after 2 years, they can continue their pursuit of an academic degree either at a community college or at the University of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, there's only a very small fiscal note associated with this. I think it was estimated by the University of Wyoming, if I can get over here to the white copy of the bill, that at the most it would result in an additional $35,000 draw on the Hathaway Scholarship Program. So it's fairly minimal draw. This is more in keeping the scholarship or in the Hathaway Scholarship Program in line with the expectations we have of the students. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the no vote in the committee on this. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing is we've got Hathaway going. We're getting good numbers in on it and the data collected. And then we have all these little attempts to come in and change it. And we need to kind of pick a time and a place. We say, this is what we're going to do for a while and get the data. On the fiscal note, you don't even look out there at all of the literature that's been printed at the university, at the community colleges, every place out there. They're going to have to go back now and change everything. So at the least, we should have left the name the same and just put an extension to the next one. But we are changing the Hathaway a little bit here and a little bit there. Let's just stick with what it is. This bill was not brought to us by the Education Department. This bill was brought to us by an individual who had one girl over in his district that had a problem with it. Because when he brought it to me to be a co-sponsor on it, there was a couple of us that stood here and told him, we need to stick with it. We need to keep this going. Let's get some data before we do it. Vote it up or down, but we are changing what we worked a long time to establish to get there.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Massey.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, we've only changed the Hathaway Scholarship once in its 3 or 4 years existence, and that was last year for those and give a second chance to those students who drop out of college and they come back within a short period of time. That's the only change that we've made. And as far as the motivation for doing this, I'm a little confused by it. Perhaps that's the motivation behind the House sponsor, but I'm the one who wrote this bill. I just simply didn't have the opportunity, no pun intended, to begin sponsoring it here. So serving with this individual on the Education Committee, I asked him if he would carry it starting down in the House. Now, I don't know what his motivation was for doing that, but what I just described to you is accurate. And that's the reason this bill is coming in front of you, not to make an exception for one person, but to fit in and have the Hathaway Scholarship Program conform to the education that we're providing people in our high school. And finally, Mr. Chairman, it's probably not asking the university and community colleges who are receiving an awful lot of money from this program to change their literature so that we can give folks who have proved that they can be successful an opportunity in life to earn a bachelor's degree, or perhaps to earn an associate's degree. That's going to serve them for the rest of their life. I think it's worthwhile. We have the money in the program to do it. And again, it reflects the education that we're providing in our high schools, and I urge its adoption. Thank you.
Senator Larson.
Yes, I wonder if the sponsor could tell me how this differs or ties in or doesn't relate or whatever with the bill that we passed through this body, at least earlier, sponsored in part by the good senator from Green River, I believe, which was a career bill to let them go to junior college and learn certain trades and skills and all of those kind of things. How does this tie into that, or if at all? But it appears to me we're doing the same thing.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These are two different groups of students. Those who would take advantage of the program that we passed earlier would not be eligible for the Hathaway program whatsoever. And it was primarily aimed at students who've been out of school for some time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, in order for them to come back into the program. As a reminder, as part of that bill, we segmented out those students who would be interested in taking that program right out of high school, and they got a lesser amount of money to go there than the students that were really going to be attracted to it, and those were ones who had been out of school for some time. The folks that are included in this provisional opportunity grant, or the old career, have been there from the start. We've always believed that they should have an opportunity or a shot at higher education, whether it's a certificate program, an associate's degree, or a bachelor's degree. And so this program isn't changing in that intent or the kind of students that are going to be going into it.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 174, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 174 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration, for Committee of the Whole consideration, is House Bill 239. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 239, sponsored by Representative Qualberg, Bighorn Basin Discovery Center, an act relating to Wyoming Bighorn Basin Nature and Discovery Center. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, who report back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Meyer, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senators Massey and Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 239. And, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill number 239, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 5.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment number 1, and I'll go through it very, very briefly. As the bill came to our committee, all it had left in it was $100,000. Originally, it talked about construction and all of those kind of things. So, Mr. Chairman, without going through it step by step, what our committee did was take out all reference to any construction and left that money available for planning purposes, required a report, moved the timeline back from 2014, because it isn't going to be a construction, moved the timeline back to 2010 and required a report on the progress and put some other planning items in there, such as the economic viability and funding options, because it became apparent that it probably was going to have some difficulty without coming back to the state for funding for the construction of capital planning. So we removed any reference to construction and made the bill, I think, to where it is now limited strictly to the planning. I will not go through the bill. I'll save that for somebody else. But I would ask that you vote on the amendment at this time.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 239, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the explanation of the bill, I'd like to call on Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief considering the time. This bill is a good bill, and it's a bill that has gone from $15 million to $100,000 just for planning, just to keep the project alive among the citizens of Thermopolis and Hot Springs County. I do want to mention that it includes not just Hot Springs County and Thermopolis, but it has the support of Washakie, Bighorn, and Park. It is a gateway to our basin, the South Gateway, and just by information, that state park that this will be built on is probably the most attended state park in the state. As the testimony provided, 900,000 visitors each year visit that state park. 40% of all state revenues generated by state parks are generated by Hot Springs State Park. So it's the most popular state park that we have in our state, and this would be a great addition to that state park. As you want to refer to, I'll direct your attention to the brochure that was handed out, the proposal. Probably the best-looking proposal that we've received this session as a legislature. We've raised the bar. I can refer you to page 2. A lot of that information is that on page 2 are the questions that you probably have on what's the purpose of this interpretive center, this Nature and Discovery Center, and what it's going to try to accomplish, and the cost, the square footage. All that information is on that page. The next page I'd refer you to is page, I believe it's 5, the picture of the proposed facility along with the location. For those of you familiar with leaving Thermopolis to the north after you pass the high school, what used to be the Holiday Inn, now the Days Inn across the river. You can see the location. The armory is what you see there on the bottom left picture, the building. And so you can see the highway, the state highway. That is the portion of ground that the facility would sit on. On page 7, the proposal is getting more now into the investment and basically what it's going to take to get this thing off the ground and constructed. Initial funding explains what Hot Springs County has put into it. The Cultural Trust Fund, Wyoming Arts Council, a lot of different donations, and a lot of this is going to be raised by private donations. All we're asking here in this bill is the $100,000 for basically the continue on the proposal with design and a couple of things that need to be done on the ground out there at that site, proposed site. And so the bill itself, fellow senators and Mr. Chairman, in Section 1 is asking for the appropriation of $100,000 out of the budget reserve account to the State Loan and Investment Board to be expended as provided in this act, only upon the conditions the Joint Powers Board be formed in Hot Springs County. And just in closing, Mr. Chairman, this is an area that has been discovered just in the last probably 10 to 20 years as far as dinosaur tracks, the hot springs itself, petroglyphs throughout the basin. We have it's a great opportunity to diversify our economy even more by capitalizing on tourism. 900,000 visitors a year, fellow senators, is nothing to scoff at. That's quite an achievement, and that's something that we need to add on to and continue to grow if we can. So I'd ask for your support and stand for any questions.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an important question to ask right here is, where are we going with this? What is the expectation for the state? Keep in mind, the original bill asked for $15 million from the state in order to begin building this project. It's now down to $100,000. So where are we going with that $100,000? Are we loading the pipeline for a major project and facility at Hot Springs State Park in Thermopolis? And if so, you know, other than just simply leasing the land, which I think is a great idea, what is going to be the expectation for the state as far as funding construction from here on out? This project is not a priority of the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department, at least based upon the testimony in the Appropriations Committee. Now, they're quite supportive of the idea, especially from a leaser's perspective. But their priorities was in a TRW committee bill that came through here earlier of roughly the same amount of money as originally in this bill, $15 million, and we were able to fund $1 million of that. So I think it's important to ask, before we move forward with the bill, what is the expectation of the state going forward on this project? Will it be to eventually put $15 million into this to match private donations, or is $100,000 going to be all that we're expected to provide?
Further discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Geis.
That depends on the legislature. But what this will do, we'll get the plans. They'll get their joint power board put together, because I think they're working with Washakie County, Hot Springs County, and the town of Thermop to get in this joint power board. And then what this center will do, if we decide to go with it, it's going to keep tourists in the state of Wyoming about two or three more days than they are now. And it'll make them not only just come to Yellowstone Park, but that Bighorn Basin, probably one of the best-kept secrets of formations and things that you have ever seen, because none of you have been out to Castle Garden, which is between Worland and Tensleep. That formation is fantastic. We got one. Cedar Ridge, nobody's been out there. Then you got up on Drewsbury. You talk about the Badlands of South Dakota. You got where the old seabeds and stuff washed down through, then the colors and formations of that. There's 15 square miles out there of the most beautiful scene you want to look at. And then you got the Wind River Canyon, and my friends get smiling over there, and that's great. You got universities and people from all the world coming and looking at the formations in Wind River Canyon. And so all this does is let them get started, and then if you don't want to do anything, that's fine. Just
Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had exactly the same discussion in our committee as the good senator from Laramie brought up. That's why we stripped everything out that even relates to or promises any kind of construction. After we had taken testimony, there were many of us in the committee who admonished the group that was there, a very wonderful group of people from up there, that there was some testimony that after it got going, it would pay for itself with funds. We did have also a lot of discussion about a famous state park over the mountain here to do with sheriffs and guns and prisons and how we kept putting money into that after it had gone and what a debacle that turned out to be. So what we did is stripped out any reference to construction, left the money in there to do the planning, but it was the belief of most of the committee it will not sustain itself on admissions, that it cannot be successful without a large endowment, and this, all of this came up, and that most of us at least expressed that we're not going to build it. We've been down that road on a couple of them, and we're not going to build it again. But I think it was prudent to, in fairness, to let them put their committee together, their joint powers board. We also had some local government people there, and they were asked, if this does not support itself, which most of us feel it cannot, would you continue, though you can't bind future governments, do you believe the community would continue to support it through 1% sales tax or all the other things? By letting them do this, I think it would be a wonderful project. I, for one, would never vote for the construction to fund it. That was made pretty clear by our committee. But it does give them the opportunity to perhaps see if they can raise private money, see what the Joint Powers Board can do, get some things. If it does, it would be a benefit to the whole state of Wyoming. But it's expensive. It is a consensus that it would not pay for itself. But we thought it was only fair to give them this small amount of money to be able to move forward in the planning process. And as far as we as a committee were concerned, we're not going to pay for it as far as the state goes. So I'm glad you asked the question. We had the very same questions.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, one thing that was brought up, I guess, in the committee when we had testimony was that the state director of parks there said basically that not all good ideas come from government. And he felt that this was a good idea. I feel it's just an excellent opportunity. If you run the numbers at $900,000, somebody will spend between $100 and $150 a day. If you get this thing to be almost like a gateway representation of the rest of the state of Wyoming, right in the middle of the state, they've got to spend at least one more or two more nights someplace in Wyoming. And I think this is going to be a heck of an opportunity. I think you're going to pay for it with sales tax even if you do build it. But this is a good start to find out whether or not these guys can get some traction. I think it's an exciting project. A lot more exciting on where we're spending some of our other dollars, because this one actually has a chance to get some return. Most of the rest of the dollars are spending millions of dollars out in the middle of nowhere to try to preserve something that hardly anybody will visit. You get 900,000 people here a year. I mean, that's the third park right behind Grand Teton and I think Grand Targhee, you know. And I think this is just it's one of the most exciting things that I've seen in the state parks thing in a long time.
Senator Cooper.
For the bill, Mr. Chairman, the one thing that was brought up in the committee, too, I thought was good, and you can find this in the brochure there, but, you know, these folks had gone out and spent a considerable amount of time, as was alluded to earlier, you know, collecting some private donations, looking for some private funding, and did those things, to the tune of a couple hundred thousand dollars themselves. So It wasn't like they weren't trying to do the right things themselves and to have, as we say, some skin in the game themselves. So they've been working at this, and so we look at that on that favorably also.
Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 239, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 239 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 230. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 230, sponsored by Representative Anderson, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax 2. An act relating to vehicle sales and use tax. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Larson, Martin, and Perkins. No, Senators Case and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 230. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd like to have that read in at this time.
House Bill number 230, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 1.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the standing committee amendment at this time and suggest we dispense with further reading. Mr. Chairman, what the standing committee does, the committee amendment does, we got this from LSO. It goes in and deletes some language, and I'll walk through it. The reason we're deleting it is it's already in a bill that's been signed as an enrolled act. What we do is we go in on lines 1 and 2 and delete requiring the titling of certain vehicles. It deletes on line 8 the reference to Army Statute 312-101B. And then it deletes on page 1, lines 12 through 18, and on page 2, lines 1 through 3. This language has already been incorporated in an enrolled act, so we need to take it out from this. And I'd answer any questions and call for the question on the standing committee.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1, to House Bill 230, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, for an explanation of this bill, I yield to Senator Perkins.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What you have before you with House Bill 230 is something that hopefully will meet with your approval. The problem with that we have, and with the language that's just stricken because it's going to be law in Wyoming, is ultimately a lot of things that used to be untitled, like boats, ATVs, and some other different off-road vehicles and recreational vehicles, will now have to be titled. So that's already gone through, and that's already going to be the law. The question then becomes, what do we do with sales tax? Currently, if you buy a motorcycle or a snowmobile or another type of recreational toy or a boat, you pay sales tax at the point of purchase, whether you're in state or out of state. And what this would do, particularly with the titling, is if you're an out of state resident and you come in and you buy one of those types of vehicles, one of those toys, I'll call them, that you're not going to have to pay sales tax in Wyoming. You're going to have to go back and you'll pay sales tax when you get back home, whether it's to the state, one of the surrounding states. The two things that I think that this bill does and makes it important for us is, one, what you have is it creates a level playing field. Our surrounding states are doing these types of things, and right now there is some limited ability to get a tax refund if your purchaser has to go through that. Sometimes he can get a tax refund from his local taxing jurisdictions. Sometimes he can get a partial tax refund. But what you have is there's a lot of hassle for a customer that comes in. And when you do this, you're talking about local people with small businesses that are in these things, so your constituents. And there is, if you want to look for this, there's something I distributed earlier today called HB 230 Facts. It's written by a gentleman who is a local businessman here, who has a local motorsport business, and those are some of the elements that he thought were important behind him. But ultimately, what it does is going to avoid double taxation on people who come from out of state to buy this. It'll also put them on equal footing. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. We had testimony in committee that in a neighboring state to the southwest, that there's a guy who advertises in the local paper. And he tells you, come on down to my place in state X, and we can sell you this without sales tax. And so what you're doing, if you look at that, it knocks 5% off. Now, when you get back, when you come back into the state, when you go to license that or get your title work, you're going to have to show proof of sales tax and pay your sales tax then. So it's a little bit misleading, but nevertheless, they're not going to have to pay sales tax at the outlet there. When they can, and so what that does is it's going to keep people from migrating across the border to buy out of state. It also puts them on equal footing with people who would come from other states into here and purchase from our small business people here. The testimony from the Department of Revenue was this is revenue neutral, that ultimately the sales tax you get is the sales tax you'll get. You'll have to assume that people will, if they buy out of state, will have to come in when they go get the titles. They're going to have to pay the sales tax. The people who buy these and sign an affidavit that from out of state, they won't be charged sales tax there, that they'll pay the sales tax when they go home. And so ultimately that's what it is. It makes it a little bit more like a motor vehicle, not exactly like a motor vehicle, because you'll still pay, residents will still pay sales tax at the point of purchase, but it will equal the playing field and avoid double taxation of people who come into Wyoming to buy these types of things and then return home. I stand for questions and would urge for your favorable consideration.
Discussion, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think the contention that this is revenue neutral is a bit misleading. If you can take a look at the fiscal note yourself, but you can also see that the language requiring expanded titling is actually removed from the bill. So that section's dropped from the bill. So really, the Department of Revenue was basing their estimate that you would have to title more vehicles so you're going to catch them and collect more taxes. But that part's not in the bill now. So I don't think that's quite true, and I'll stand corrected if anybody wishes. But you can also look at the fiscal note on the original bill.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I guess there's something I'm missing in the explanation, because currently this is being done. You can go out of state and buy some of these things you have listed there, and you either forget what type of paper you get, but then you go home and pay your sales tax and buy your license right at home. And this is look like to me what you're putting in the law, something we're already doing. I know I've done it in two states that joins us, so there's something I'm missing here. Didn't understand your explanation or something along, because the people go out of state now into the two states east of us. You buy these type vehicles and you don't pay sales tax on them. Those states, you bring them home and title them and pay your sales tax there. So what am I missing?
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I'll answer the last question first. That's exactly the point. The good senator from Campbell County is exactly right. If you go out of state and you buy one of these vehicles out of state, they will not charge you sales tax there. You'll come home and you'll pay your sales tax at home. What this fixes is the exact opposite. If someone else comes from out of state and come here, right now they have to pay sales tax here, even if they're a non-resident. And so what this bill allows you to do is, if they come and they buy from a local Wyoming dealer, and you're from out of state, you can fill out an affidavit that's from out of state and not have to pay the Wyoming sales tax. Right now, what happens if somebody comes in and you attract someone, we'll say, from a community to the south of here, and they come up to Cheyenne and buy a four-wheeler here, they have to pay sales tax here. Now, they have to go through a process where they go back home and they can get part of that sales tax back that's assessed by the state, but they can't get part of it back that's assessed by home rule. And not only that, not only do they have
they get don't get a full refund of their state their sales tax, but they also have to go through the hassle of doing that. What's the effect of that on Wyoming? The effect of that on Wyoming is that our Wyoming dealers are disadvantaged. Because are you going to go, if you get a deal here, but you have to pay 5% more and then go through the hassle of getting part, some or all of your tax back, are you going to come to Wyoming and do that? And I think the answer is no. But if you can come here and you can have, you can be extended the same courtesy that the good senator from Campbell County is talking about, well, if he goes to a neighboring state and buys one of these vehicles and brings it back, and he doesn't have to pay a sales tax till he gets home, that's exactly what we're trying to set up here. So that people can come from neighboring states and enjoy that same benefit here in Wyoming. So I hopefully that answers your question. With respect to the revenue neutral, the good senator from Fremont County is exactly right. If you take this bill apart, since the titling section is no longer in here, it's now going to be in another part of the law, this bill in and of itself on its very own would not be revenue neutral. But the fact of the matter is, you're still going to have to license, you're still going to have to title these vehicles. And in order to title them, you're going to have to show proof of payment of sales tax. If you can't show that, you're going to have to pay sales tax to get your title. So if you assume that Wyoming residents are honest and that they will go get these vehicles titled, then they'll have to pay their sales tax. But if you assume that Wyoming residents are dishonest, and they'll go and use these out on places and never bother to get a title, then yes, there'll be some sales tax that's lost. If they fill out an affidavit that says, I'm a non-resident when they really are, and they go out, and if they're going to cheat the system, there's a possibility that you may lose some revenue there. But I would remind the body that we allow people to fill out affidavits all the time on sales taxes, on property taxes, and other things, saying these are the facts, and we accept that, and allow them to go their way, assuming that they'll be honest and pay those taxes later on. Again, those are my attempts to answer your questions. Hopefully that's clear and would urge your favorable recommendation on this bill.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Cooper.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, and apologize to the sponsor here maybe a little bit, but I may have missed something. But anyway, I know the way it is now that a person could go to another state and buy one of these vehicles or something and then come back to Wyoming, or a person could actually, that's reversed the other way around, like the bill talks about. A person could come to Wyoming, buy one of these recreational vehicles, go back to their own state, and never report that purchase to their own state, so therefore never paying sales tax. Now, I realize that if I remember right, there is many of these dealers actually do send a notice to the individual state departments of revenue. I believe when somebody does purchase something and say they're going to take it out of state and therefore exempt them from the sales tax. So would that work okay, though? I mean, could somebody actually do that, come to the state, buy one of these recreational vehicles, go to another state, say south of us or something, and never report that to that state that they owe the sales tax?
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The answer to that is yes, except they're supposed to be registered in the other state also. And when they register them in the other state, where they take them back home, then they either have to pay sales tax or they have to show a credit for the sales tax already having been paid. And in most states around Wyoming, in most, not all, they can sign an affidavit that shows they paid this, that they did pay the sales tax in Wyoming, or that they did not. If they haven't, they are required, just like we are in Wyoming, that was mentioned. Isn't any different, basically, than going down buying a bed or a sofa or anything else, and that's where the revenue neutrality comes in. If you're not going to pay the sales tax, no, it isn't going to be revenue neutral. But they are supposed to be registered. The only problem that, according to the testimony, as I understood it, where we have a problem, is with one state to the south of us. They get credit for sales tax paid in Wyoming now from the state portion. But since they have a law of local rule the areas to the south of us who Wyoming would like to have some of their people come up and spend their money and buy their things in Wyoming. They have a local rural part of their sales tax that they don't get a refund on. If they don't pay it here, they still have to pay it there. I don't think there's any, and I ask the question, sales tax avoidance under any circumstance. But basically what the bill does is to deal with the uncompetitive type of a position that the dealers in a particular part of our state, and frankly it's the state to the south of us that does that, who will advertise you don't have to pay in Wyoming, which really isn't true because you do, whether you come back and register it, but it puts them at a competitive disadvantage of having right now having to charge that sales tax, and then if they go to that state and those other communities have a local freedom rule, they add sales tax onto the state, and that, it doesn't matter if they paid in Wyoming, they can't get that back. So it's basically a equalizing competitive type of a thing. Doesn't bother, my understanding from testimony is, we have a reciprocal agreements with all of the states, Idaho, Utah, and so on, so it doesn't change anything there. But to the state to the south of us, because of their home rule, it puts our dealers here trying to sell to those people down there at a competitive disadvantage. And as I see, that's basically the only purpose of the bill. So you vote it up, vote it down, but that's...
Further discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 230, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 230 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for our consideration is House Bill 294. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 294, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Prescription Drug Database, an act relating to controlled substances. It was referred to Committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so, the recommendation that House Bill 294 do pass. Mr. Chairman, before we go to the Standing Committee amendment, let me briefly explain the bill. What it relates to is a database that we have developed that tracks controlled substances prescriptions. It's designed to help prescribers by identifying patients that may be doctor shopping and getting multiple prescriptions. It's designed to help in enforcement where there is abuse by potentially identifying prescribers that, for one reason or another, are way too loose with prescribing these. I remember talking to a senator from the state of Maine where they have one of these, and they found that in a hurry, they identified a few problems and were able to take care of them and make a big difference there. Mr. Chairman, this bill, it's an existing database. This bill does two things. On page 4 at the top, line 2, it goes to a weekly submission of reports. It's now every 2 weeks, so we'll get more timely information in. The second thing it does, on page, you can see on page 2 at the top, line 3, lines 2 and 3, pilot program for real-time access, and the concept is we'll move rapidly from the pilot program to the full-blown program. The problem we have is that right now it's when the prescriber has a patient in front of him that wants a prescription, it's hard to get at the information as to how many other prescriptions of that sort the prescriber has, so that when the physician has suspicions that there's a substance abuse problem here as opposed to a real pain problem, he can't find out rapidly. And by going to a real-time data access, the prescribers will be able to find that, and they'll be able to be much more intelligent in how they treat their patients. That's what this bill does, is it goes to that, has the funding for it. Mr. Chairman, there was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill number 294, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment looks lengthy, but essentially it does two things. On page 4, there was a sentence in there that, let me explain, that as introduced, the bill was intending to have the prescribing information coming in from the prescribers on a real-time basis. That proves to be a complicated and very expensive thing to do, and nobody else in the country has succeeded in getting the information that rapidly, and it was considered to be the better part of wisdom to back off on that until we had better technology and better understanding of the problems involved. This sentence was a hangover from that provision that was missed when the House took that provision out and went to the weekly submission. So that's what that part of the amendment does. The rest of it, Mr. Chairman, is cleanup of flowery lawyer talk, things that don't correspond with our drafting standard, duplicate sentences, and a simplification. And I understand that the LSO is in no way responsible for that, the responsibility for that language lies elsewhere, but the amendment is just a cleanup. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions of the Standing Committee.
Senator Scott, could you move the amendment, please?
Okay, move the Standing Committee amendment.
Any discussion, further discussion on the amendment?
Question
being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 294, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
Mr. Chairman.
A Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed.
Mr. Chairman, there was a Standing Committee Amendment from Committee number 2. I ask that be read in and yield to Senator Nicholas.
House Bill number 294, Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 8, line 6.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to House Bill 294. Folks, we reduced this appropriation down to $45,000 for a couple principal reasons. One, on learning what other states were paying to get this database, we learned that the cost was closer to about $80,000. This is an outside agency. It's one of our boards and commission that generally run on user fees and not general funds. They had in their original submission indicated that they could pay about 45% of it. So we took the lower cost and then gave them a portion of the total cost to reflect the notion that they are a board and commission that are typically have to pay a portion, if not ordinarily pay all of it, but in this instance they ought to pay a portion of it. We do recognize some benefit to the state to do this, so we recommended the lower amount of $45,000. We urge your support of the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's fair. We're asking an agency that is funded, that's a licensing board that's funded by license fees, to pay for something that we want for law enforcement purposes, for purpose of improving the practice of medicine in this state. I don't think that's fair to ask them to come up from their own license fees for that. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, I will advise the Senate I haven't heard any objection from either the agency or from the prime sponsor. So vote it up, vote it down. I do think it's unfair to stick this other agency for that.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to House Bill 294, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
I'm undecided. All those in favor of the amendment, please stand. Those opposed, please stand.
15.
The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Larson.
Just, I know it's late, but just briefly. If you go to various pharmacies, for a lot of reasons, you move around. I have prescriptions in Jackson. I come down here. I got to get them transferred. Frankly, if you're using a lot of materials, I'll use a sleeping pill as an example. I can't get it renewed once you transfer it. Is this bill going to make that more onerous than it already is for people who are legitimately using prescriptions, but for whatever reason, maybe have to travel around a little bit, have to use then different pharmacies? Is it going to make it that they got to go back to their doctor every time just to get a prescription renewed? Is it going to make that harder?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, in my judgment, for most of the drugs, it won't change at all because they're not on the controlled substance schedule. If you were using a painkiller that was on this, my judgment is it would probably, if anything, make it a little easier because they could get quicker information on what was actually happening and see that there wasn't a pattern of abuse.
Any further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 294, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 294 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 222. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 222, Establishment of Private Roads. Sponsored by Representative Brown, an act relating to the establishment of private roads. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, and Ross. No, Senator Perkins. Excuse, Senator Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 222, and I would yield to the floor manager of the bill, the Senator from Laramie.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill does two things. It addresses two issues that have arisen as a result of the private road amendments that we made several years ago. First, on page 2, it provides that while it is we created an opportunity for parties that were adversely affected by a road to suggest alternate routes, what this does is say, look, it's fine, you can designate those alternate routes, but you have to do it within 20 days of receiving your notice so that everybody knows what you're going to want to do with respect to that. The second aspect, the last page, 7, it addresses the issue of what happens in the new procedure we had created last year that allows the commissioners to certify these to the district court. The question was, is that an appealable order? The House had put out and said it's an appealable order, and then you start with a de novo decision with the district court. The second issue is when the district court takes it over, which rules does it apply? Does it apply Administrative Procedures Act or the code? And the House provision, it seemed to me, was unworkable with respect to providing an appeal from a decision, moving it from the county commissioners to the district court. You'd have to go all the way to appeal it and bring it back even while you're contesting the second part. So there is a change with respect to that. That's found in the first Committee of the Whole Amendment, and I'd ask it be read in.
House Bill 222, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 7, line 2.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 22. This is an amendment that I did work with the sponsor, and I think he agrees that there's a better approach to it. What this says is when it goes from the commissioners to the court, that's an interlocutory order, meaning that it's not final, and you do not appeal it, and it's not to be re-reviewed by the district court. And then when you go on to the district court, it follows its own rules, and you can appeal that. Once you transfer from the district court or from the county commission to the district court, that ought to just be an interlocutory final order. You don't appeal it. You just go on. I'd urge your support of the amendment and ask you to call for the question on it.
Further discussion? Senator Bebap.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just got a question. If I hold it up like this, and this is the court, and this is de novo, and this interlocutory, but this is the county commissioners. Now, if I move it over here, can I get around without doing what I'm supposed to do for private property?
Mr. Chairman, point of order. I was, after I did my little show, somebody pointed out to me somewhere in our rules that you're not supposed to use props. I would object to that.
Mr. Chairman, on a more serious note here, you're basically coming in and taking somebody's private property to provide a road for somebody else's private property. And we do need a procedure for that. But it is a taking of private property that's going on here. And it does seem to me that the 20-day notice and opportunity to provide an alternate suggestion is awful quick, that you get one of these things that's in the middle, say in a farming and ranching situation of the busy season, and we do have them. You get one of these things where somebody is away for a little bit and there's some delay on the actual person getting it, and 20 days is an awful quick period. I think we need to come back, if this goes to second reading, and look at a longer time period there. And I think there's some interlocks between this and subsequent time periods, so I think it's more than just a simple amendment to give the private landowner, whose property is essentially being taken, a little more time to, at the outset, to be able to respond intelligently to this.
We're still on the amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Call for the question on the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, I'm sorry, the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 222, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Oh, I was just going to, Mr. Chairman, with respect to the comments from the good senator from Natrona County, I agree with him. That amendment that was not the original purpose of the bill. It was added on. I'm not even sure if it should exist at all, but if it does exist, it needs to be longer and it needs to be modified. But I'm going to think over the weekend whether it ought to be there at all. But in any event, it needs modification. I would agree.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, since I'm really into roads these days, I thought I'd I was looking at on page 3 and where you struck out the words "or the viewers and the appraisers," and I was trying to play that into the rest of the changes up there. Maybe you could explain that to us, the sponsor.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was a no vote in committee on this, and for a couple of reasons. One is,
if you go back and review this entire statute, it's not very good. One of the areas has been identified by the good tall senator from my home county. But the other one too is if you go to page three and look at how this works. If you go to page three, lines 6 through 8, and again down at 14 through 16, all of a sudden, not only are you involving the person over whose land you want to go, but then that person comes in and they need to designate, well, I don't want it over my property, I want it over my neighbor's property. And so now all those people get sucked into this thing too. And as you look at this, that was one of the reasons for my no vote. As I looked through this and saw how I thought it might actually play out, it seemed, I don't know if we're making the system better or worse, and there's a major concern there. So I think when we look at that, we need to look about making sure that this is a workable solution instead of a, because right now it seems to me it's gotten worse instead of better.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I agree almost with all those comments. This bill started out as a solution to the issue of what happens when you transition from the commissioners onto the court. That is something that needs to be addressed. That's the amendment we just put on. The other part was hijacked a little bit by over there, and we need to take a look at that. I'd urge you to move it to second reading, and we may have to take the hijacking off.
Further discussion on the bill? Further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 222, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 222 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 161. The reading clerk will read the House Bill.
House Bill number 161, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer. Serve Wyoming, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Martin, Chairman. It was Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 161. To explain the bill, I would like to call on Senator Jennings and call your attention to a committee from Committee number 2 amendment that is attached.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This whole idea started last summer. We were, several of us from Natrona County were invited to a lunch, and we were told all about Serve Wyoming. Really good outfit. Started with AmeriCorps. They were in the governor before this one's administration, part of the government. Got a new administration. They kind of moved them out. They made them a nonprofit organization. When they asked us from how the Natrona County contingent was going to help them get money, I asked them, I said, how do you deal with the constitutional amendment or a portion of the handing money to nonprofits? They said, I don't know. I figured that I would go to the Attorney General and get that ruling, put it in my back pocket, and every time I had to go to one of these, I'd pull it out and say, there's what the AG says. But in this case, the AG did a little bit of research, found out that, indeed, this is part of our government. And we do appoint the board of directors. And we are responsible for their administration. So what he said was, in light of the history and language of the executive order cited, I conclude that Serve Wyoming is a state program within the Department of Workforce Services, and that the administrative expenses of the program were to be funded by the Corporation for the National Community Service, and it goes on to say why. So, Mr. Chairman, what they did is they came to us and said, we're part of you, now let us have some money. And that's basically what the bill says. It does go in there, kind of outline where they want to be. It's also taking them out of workforce services and put them back under the governor's office. It's pretty plain, simple, forward. I thought I had a really good reason to get an AG's opinion and not have to argue about funding nonprofits after that, and it didn't work. So we, this one says we should. There's the, I would like to address the Standing Committee amendment before we do it. It's a good amendment. They went from not having anything to having something and now back to something a little less. I would hope to pass the amendment and the bill.
There's a Standing Committee amendment?
Hasn't been read yet.
Not yet. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask the Standing Committee amendment be read in, and has it been read in?
Not yet.
House Bill 161, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 8.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. I also move the adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 161. Mr. Chairman, this is an amendment where we basically gave them part of the money they wanted. We gave them $75,000. They wanted $125,000. The testimony was is that they actually went out and did fundraising and found the $125,000 in other means. We felt that if we gave them a little bit of money, that would, in this particular economy, that it would be a prudent thing to do to help them along their fundraising efforts. And so I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 161, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I left a formality out about moving the bill. Or did he move the bill?
You moved the bill, Senator.
I did move it?
I believe so. Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
Thank you.
Larson moved the bill.
They got moved. Question on it.
Any further discussion on the moved bill? Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would urge you to vote for this. It allows many of these organizations, predominantly youth organizations and so on, I refer to the Wyoming Conservation Corps that we did a few years ago through the university. It allows them to go out and raise some funds, and they do, I think, a lot of good things within the communities, and it's not a lot of money, but it does allow them access to do a lot of, and it's volunteer stuff mostly, almost all volunteer, not entirely, and this is more of a staffing type thing. But I would urge you to support the bill. I think it's good, and they do a lot of good for the state of Wyoming.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 161, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 161 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for consideration is House Bill 136. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 136, sponsored by Representative Childers, State Legal Action, NEPA, and ESA, an act relating to federal natural resource policy. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, Dockstetter, and Jennings. No, Senator Burns and Sessions. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Jennings?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole arises, it does so with favorable consideration of House Bill 136.
I'm sorry, Senator Jennings, I have not. It is, you've heard the reading of the bill. I believe that Senator Bebout is managing managing the bill.
I yield the floor to Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member of the Senate, House Bill 136 deals with NEPA and ESA, NEPA being the National Environmental Protection Act and ESA being the Endangered Species Act. Of course, NEPA was became law in the 60s, amended in 69. It's administered by the Council on Environmental Quality. And what this bill does is, if you look at the front page of it, starting with line 11, page 1, the Attorney General shall investigate potential litigation against the federal government. The whole purpose of this bill, Mr. Chairman, is we've talked about the cooperating agency status and a lot of work that goes on with our county commissioners and other groups to get involved with cooperating agency status with the federal government to try to solidify the position of Wyoming relative to the federal government when they deal with different issues relative to multiple use of our lands and how it affects it in many ways. And one of the tools that's obviously available to us, Mr. Chairman, is for the Attorney General to be involved in litigation. Now, I will tell you that nothing prohibits the Attorney General from doing this at this time. The sponsor of this bill felt like this would give some teeth to him and possibly encourage him maybe to do this in certain areas. The reason we brought the Endangered Species Act into this is because of the wolf issue, and we're all very familiar with that. Mr. Chairman, if you look at page 3, the top of the page starting with line 2, it talks about different sections of NEPA 101. That's the spirit of the act, and actually it says the intent is to include man in the decision-making process. 103 is a review authority. 104 is the states and governments and how they deal and are involved with it. You further go further through the bill, Mr. Chairman, you'll see on page 3, lines 12, it's language that's used under the requirements of NEPA. And, Mr. Chairman, that really is the bill. The funding for it comes out of the Federal Natural Resource Policy Act, of which there's about $1.2 million in. It sends a message from this body, if it so passes, to the Attorney General that there are certain instances and cases where we'd like to have you represent us, and there are certain times when maybe we should stand up to the federal government. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wouldn't it be cheaper just to walk downstairs and tell him?
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Bebout.
I don't have all my pictures up here to talk about the route you would take, but it probably would be.
Further discussion on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 136, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
We're going to have a standing vote. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. It has House Bill 136 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, where have you been?
I would move that with a Committee of the Whole rise and report. And before we act on that motion, I think I would like to yield to Senator Larson. He has an announcement.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee number 9 shall meet up there immediately. There is no other stuff other than the boring stuff we have to do at the end to finish our confirmations. And if you would come up, though we're not adjourned yet, if you would come up at this time, we are excused from the floor, and we'll finish our confirmation process immediately. Thank you, Mr. President.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Mr. President.
Chief Clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 69, do pass amended. House Bill 73, do pass. House Bill 130, do pass amended. House Bill 299, do pass amended. House Bill 61, do pass amended. House Bill 118, do pass amended. House Bill 85, do pass amended. House Bill 267, do pass. House Bill 191, do pass amended. House Bill 179, do pass amended. House Bill 162, do pass. House Bill 144, do pass amended. House Bill 174, do pass. House Bill 239, do pass amended. House Bill 230, do pass amended. House Bill 294, do pass amended. House Bill 222, do pass amended. House Bill 161, do pass amended. And House Bill 136, do pass. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Messages from the House.
February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 447, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 32, Wyoming Livestock Health and Emergency Disease Program. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 56. Excused 4. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 448, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 11, Dogs Chasing Wildlife. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. February the 27th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 449, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 190, Driver's License Suspensions Child Support. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 50, noes 6, excused 4. February the 27th, 2009, message number 450, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. House Bill number 226, State Land Grazing Leases. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, excused 1, conflict 1. House message number 451, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. House bill number 287, Helium Property Tax. House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 bill on report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, excused 4. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 54.
Senate Enrolled Act number 54 being original Senate File 48.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 54, being original Senate File number 48. So signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 55.
Senate Enrolled Act number 55, being original Senate File 32.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 55,
being Senate Original File Number 32. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 69.
House Enrolled Act Number 69, being Original House Bill 173.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 69, being House Original House Bill Number 173. I'm so signed. House Bill, House Enrolled Act Number 70.
House Enrolled Act Number 70, being Original House Bill 215.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 70, being Original House Bill Number 215. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 71.
House Enrolled Act Number 71, being Original House Bill Number 42.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 71, being Original House Bill Number 42. That's so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 72.
House Enrolled Act Number 72, being Original House Bill 104.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 72, being Original House Bill Number 104. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act Number 73.
House Enrolled Act Number 73, being Original House Bill 156.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 73, being Original House Act Numbers 156. House Enrolled Act Number 74.
House Enrolled Act Number 74, being Original House Bill 289.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 74, being Original House Bill Number 289. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 75.
House Enrolled Act Number 75, being Original House Bill 297.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 75, being House Original House Bill Number 297. That's so signed. House Enrolled House Joint Resolution Number 2.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution Number 2, being Original House Joint Resolution Number 8.
I'm about to sign House Joint Resolution Number 2, being Original House Joint Resolution Number 8. That's so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. next Monday morning.
Announcement. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet jointly with the House counterparts in the House Committee Room at 8 a.m. to consider interim topics.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I need to announce a conference committee meeting on House Bill 39, Population Determinations, Use of Federal Census. The House chairman just crawled over here and requested that we might possibly meet, and I thought we could work it in. We're suggesting Monday morning at 9 o'clock in S-19, and that would be Case, Johnson, and Haster.
You've heard the motion, Senator Burns.
I'd like to have a meeting of the Senate Travel Committee here at my desk immediately upon adjournment, please.
Further announcements? You've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning, March 7th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.